Hello and welcome to the Tech & Toast podcast. We simplify the way you buy and manage your hospitality tech. You can click through to techontoast.community where you can search our marketplace, attend our events, grab your free tech audit, and we will help you visualize your tech stack as you grow into 2024. Meanwhile, summer in Australia.
Hey, Louis, do you think we should sponsor the Tech & Toast podcast? I mean, I really like Chris and I really like what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that's a ripper idea, LP. It's a perfect fit for what we do at Red Cat.
I mean, I agree. I'm just not sure how we get our message across around, like, Red Cat specializing in multi-site groups, you know, like cafe groups and fast casual groups and QSRs and all that.
Maybe we mention some of our customers like Nando's in Australia, New Zealand, the restaurants at the Aussie Open, Boost Juice International. I mean, they've got over 700 sites.
Hang on. I think that was the sponsors. This is the Tech & Toast podcast. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the next episode of Tech & Toast podcast. And this week, we're delighted to be joined by the regional manager for UK, Ireland and Rumia from Lightspeed, Michael Enslin. How are you, Michael?
I'm great, Chris. Thanks
so
for having me.
You will have noticed, everybody, that I said Rumia rather than Imia. Can you explain, please?
Look, there's the way we've set up Lightspeed is that there are certain nations that are English-speaking that we still interface with. So Rumia is rest of Europe.
Rest of Europe.
Yes. Okay. Middle East and Africa. So in the middle of that, there is Gibraltar, Malta, Portugal, Spain, Norway.
Wow. You tech guys get around, don't you?
We do.
It's very interesting. So look, thank you very much for joining us today in BrewDog. We're here. We've just bumped into Mr. McCulloch.
We have.
Yeah, who was down here in his sandals looking a bit odd, but there you go. What have you got planned for today, apart from talking to me? Have you got a busy day ahead of you?
No, I've just cleared my calendar. All I want to do is spend time with you.
Love that. If everybody said that, we could just go bowling after this. Look, tell me a little bit about you. We've bumped each other. We've had our paths have crossed, let's say, over the past few years. I've seen you a few times, but tell the listeners a bit more about you.
Oh, I mean, how long have you got?
Well, about half an hour.
Look, I, as you can hear, South African born. And about 10 years ago, I made the move to come across here to challenge myself. But ultimately, that's sort of what drove me to get here and my background to end up back in hospitality and tech, et cetera, is how I end up here. I started off, just like everybody, studying, trying to make money, and hustling. So one of my first jobs ever was waitering. I also did barista, I also did barman, I also managed a venue. I did all of that whilst au pairing, whilst coaching some sports in the afternoon.
Wow. What sport?
Rugby, cricket.
Had to be. Yeah. Had to be. Just checking. Yeah. No football in there.
No. Soccer.
Yeah. Let's not get into that.
So that's what I did, and I fell in love with hospitality. The interactions with people, the hustle of it, the fact that you could start a new business just on the fly, figure it out. That whole piece I fell in love with. So that's one where it starts. Early 20s, while I'm trying to figure out what I want to do and where I'm going, I go and help in a family-run real estate company, which is doing rentals. And I come across this interesting piece. I was meant to be there for a couple of months, ends up being 4 years, to just help digitize what they were doing. But what I found was three ladies who were 40, 50 years my senior, who were doing an extremely good job, had epic relationships with business owners, were extremely knowledgeable, but by all means, these days, extremely slow at what they were doing. Everything was done on Word. There was no software, but charging a premium. And this was the interesting piece. So we were doing a slower job, not as quick, not as efficient, but we had the right relationships, we were knowledgeable in what was happening, and we could charge more than anyone else. And that was my first, like, aha moment in terms of being able to build a business of genuinely connecting with people and almost taking what I loved in hospitality into a business world.
That's a really good example of getting it right. You know, correct. And that customer care piece, I think, which it's now a department within a tech product, customer care, or customer success, as you guys might call it. But it's really interesting, isn't it, that was a light bulb moment for you, seeing that actually, if we look after people properly, we do things right, it actually doesn't matter if you're the fastest or the sexiest or whatever else ticks boxes these days.
Yeah, we had that conversation, which is how much pain you've got to go through to actually go and end up ripping out your point of sale.
Yeah.
There is a lot of time that we are given to go and solve problems and actually help once that decision is made. So I think that's a key part. I think the other is I'm fortunate to have grown up with one foot on each side. So what I mean by this is I grew up, World Wide Web comes up 1991, right?
I'm not going to tell you how old I was then.
So I'm 3-4 years old. My first time I interact with social media is Facebook. I'm 18. So I've grown up with no cell phones, kicking a rugby ball between two light posts after school, as well as Instagram, TikTok, etc. I've got a tape recorder back in the day where I'm recording the radio.
So you're making me feel really old. Stop it.
Plus, now I've got Spotify, right? So I've seen both elements. And that love for tech means I've seen innovation, I think, faster than anybody. You know, right now it's still moving quick, but I got to see it really explode.
Yeah.
And so combining those three, love for hospitality, that aha moment in business, combining that with a love for tech, and I call myself a little bit of a geek in trying everything. I've got a Remarkable in front of me, a digital diary for no reason.
I literally am buying one of them. I keep seeing them. I need to buy one.
I love it. And then all of that comes together in that I want to push myself. I came across several years before to the UK playing some very amateur cricket, but fell in love with the place.
Like your national team.
And I end up at a company called ePossibility, where I combine every single one of those skills and end up growing a business where we grow a service around tech in hospitality. And growing, instead of going with a sales approach where you just flog anything, we build a consultancy and actually giving good advice, helping, supporting, growing a business. And then a couple of jumps. And I end up at Lightspeed doing exactly the same thing I originally set out doing, just at a scale, bigger scale.
And Lightspeed's, I was saying to you before we got talking actually, that before the podcast, that when I was just coming out of hospitality, as in a proper job, as I would say, paid by an employer, into my consultancy lifetime.
Yeah.
I was working with small to medium businesses, helping them understand their product, understand their journey. Not really in tech at that point, but tech obviously was falling into it, and Lightspeed was everywhere. Mm. It was very much a product that entrepreneurs were looking at or that fitted on. I think the words I used, it just worked.
Yeah.
And I think it was really interesting that first part of my career. And I'll be honest with you, when I was in operations, I didn't really care. Like, I understood it all. I understood what I needed, but I didn't really understand brands of pods or anything like that. I didn't have to. I just had one thing that worked.
Yeah.
And when it didn't work, I went and bought a new one.
Yeah.
And actually, because I was using Lightspeed so much in those early days of my consultancy, or not using it, onboarding it, it was really simple. And I suppose you've obviously progressed since then, which is about 7 years ago when I started doing this madness. Give us your best pitch, I suppose, for Lightspeed right now. I think, you know, you're not being tested here.
Yeah.
I'm sure the bosses aren't listening. No.
Well, first question to push back at you. Define hospitality.
Oh. Oh, God. Giving service.
Okay. And dictionary says, friendly and generous reception and entertainment of guests, visitors, or strangers.
Okay, obviously I was nowhere near, but that's not the point.
No, no, no. I mean, it's ballpark exactly the same. So look, Lightspeed is a one-stop commerce platform that allows you to simplify, scale, and grow, allowing you to give exceptional customer experiences to your customers. That's the journey, right? And that's the one that hopefully the boss
has. That was a good pitch.
Thank you. But fundamentally, what does that mean? We give them the tools to make sure they can continue to give exceptional customer experiences. So you said service.
Yeah.
That needs to continue. What we need to do just sits in the background and gives customers access. I mean, we're a BrewDog, right? So we walk in, there's a QR code on every single table. But there is also a kiosk because they know sometimes people can't get connection or they don't know how that works or they've not used it before. Plus, there's bars. There's all three.
Yeah.
Right? So what they've done is they've listened to their consumer and they've provided what they needed to do. All the tools are there. That's what we do so that the customer experience is not hurt in any way, shape or form. And ultimately, that's our North Star.
Love that. And how flexible are you then? So if you think about it, you just explained BrewDog, actually. Waterloo is another level in terms of venue size. And I was talking to JB about the States, and he was saying, oh, Chris, these are like, there's one a penny. There's loads of them like this size. In the UK, this is slightly different than a big venue. But even for smaller operators who just might have that little nuanced thing that they do that someone else doesn't do next door, how flexible can you be in customizing, I suppose, Lightspeed and helping those people?
Yep. Look, that is sort of what I call our unfair advantage. So I think we were born cloud.
Right.
If you go and look at our original product, so we've gone on this path of acquiring four different hospitality businesses in 3 years, right? In that patch, we've done 9 businesses in total, brought them all into a single hospitality product. So in that gap, if you look at that, we were actually born in the cloud. Our product exists in a world where marketplace is normal.
Yeah.
We had this discussion.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a really good explanation. I mean, let's explain it because I thought it was a good chat.
I think that, like, you've got an Apple iPhone. I do. And I think that marketplace is the new normal. iPhone. Do you know when the first iPhone came out?
Is it 99?
2007.
Oh, my God. Are you joking?
Yeah.
Sony Mars Bar might have been 99. Yeah.
And now you run your whole life on it.
Yeah.
Right? So it's become the new normal. Marketplace is the new normal, as long as you've got a good infrastructure. So your question is customization, flexibility. Yeah. Like, what do we provide to either a new merchant or a mid-market or enterprise? We give them that customization, but we give them a stable infrastructure. So point is, I know that upfront, what you need to do, take a sale.
Yeah.
Super simple. And that needs to be really basic. Your staff need to get it. They need to have... They need to know what your products are. So if I push a button for long enough, does an image come up with allergens and descriptions? It needs to just be basic. Is our point of sale the best in the world? My opinion, yes, but it's an output to function. It's a thing that you require in order to do service, right? And so that's what we do exceptionally well. We do venture into other places, but then we allow you to go deeper with other systems. I think the point in this is you don't get an Apple driver delivering your phone. You don't only go and buy your Apple phone from an Apple store. It can be bought in many places. You don't only use Apple apps. So this decision of customization is what every single merchant, every single customer has already made that decision on.
And the reason we got to this chat earlier on was because we were talking about the fact that I keep getting into these conversations with operators. They've had enough.
Yeah.
Integrations are doing their add-in. They've had enough. They want all in one place. And all the all in one people are like, yay, this is great. And then all the best in class are like, no. And I think there's a real argument for both, obviously, depending on the situation. But you guys have really strong integration, right? You have a lot of partners, don't you, you're working
with?
We do. It's one of the things that actually drew me to Lightspeed in those early days, that actually you're already on that journey. So let's call it your app store, the Lightspeed app store. You know, it's not the app store, but, you know, from that iPhone comparison where the app store was like your like a whole new universe, wasn't it?
100%.
It's so exciting. You can go and pick whatever, and you guys could do the same.
100%. Look, let's be clear. There are traditional all-in-one systems out there that are exceptional.
Yeah.
They've been answering support calls for customers for the last 20 years, right? They've been building and building and building. Have they got exceptional systems? Absolutely. But they will slow you down in the long run. Because if you don't have the right infrastructure, and I mean, a marketplace is not just Apple, right?
Yeah.
Everyone on who's listening to
this. Tackle Toast Marketplace.
Yeah.
Good plug. Thank you. I'm here all day.
Amazon, we all use it. It's exactly the same thing. Like, this is the new normal. This is the expectation. And for me, nobody else is in that place like we are. We have a system at our core, get a bit geeky, it's built on blockchain.
Yeah.
Nobody else is. Right, so let's imagine a world. Do we think that...
Explain blockchain, because in comparison to if you're not on blockchain, what would you be built on?
Absolutely. So look, instead of answering it that way, I'll try and make it a little bit more simple.
Yeah, otherwise simplification is required.
You require a server. Let's look back 10 years. You would have a computer with a base, and that's how it would access the internet.
Yeah.
Most point of sales right now will have a server somewhere on site.
Yeah.
We don't require that. Our devices use each other and are smart enough to they are the server, peer-to-peer. So if you look at cryptocurrency as an example, the best thing about it is it uses everyone's computer as the server all the way along.
Yeah.
We're doing the same
blockchain.
Thing. But that's blockchain. It's simple.
Thank
very
you.
Simple.
That was really useful.
Thank you. So there's also someone swearing at me and saying a terrible description. At very basic level, that's what it does. And so if you think 10 years from now, and I had to ask everyone listening to this, do you think there is going to be a physical point of sale any longer? Some people will say no. Some people will say yes.
Yeah.
Who's currently in the best possible position to give you still that? Because you still need operations, right?
Yeah.
Things have still got to print, still have to communicate. People still need to order, probably on their own devices or other devices. And then it's got to go somewhere. There's still a single source of truth. And right now, our infrastructure means that, in my opinion, we have an unfair advantage.
So you were early. If you think about it, really, you guys were early in terms of when you, again, harping back to that early time of Lightspeed, you were early in what you saw happening, which you mentioned innovation in your little, when you were talking about you growing up in the business, about how you saw, you enjoyed innovation. And I actually think that time period between 2007, the first iPhone, and now is only, what, 15 years?
Yeah.
And actually, we were talking again, saying, how long will it take us to get to the point where integration isn't even a conversation, where it becomes... It's just expected to be brilliant.
Agreed. So so you go on your phone, you download Strava for exercise.
You're having a go or?
No.
You're making me do it all.
And you go and connect that to Apple, right? You don't have to phone someone for an onboarding.
Yeah.
You just put in your login details and the two connect and they speak. And when every time you log in or you do an exercise, it just pushes through both ways, et cetera.
Yeah.
And you can go and track all your points, et cetera. Why do we think hospitality is going to be any different? Why can I not take the right infrastructure, log into the systems that I have, and the data flow between the two? They may require some mapping, and sure, there's going to be some even more in-depth things that need to happen. But at a very basic level, for core systems, I mean, sales, cost of sales, we should be able to do that. And I think that that's the journey we're on, is to really simplify. Because then, come all the way back around to our North Star, we're giving our merchants the ability to serve customers properly, give that magical experience, because our systems shouldn't be getting in the way and they shouldn't be hurting that.
And I'm not putting you on the spot, but how long? Do you know, like if we fast forwarded 5 years, for example, so do you think in 5 years we'll be at a point where there's been consolidation, because that's going to happen, obviously, because we had a big boost of tech during the pandemic and then it's kind of remained and there's spin-offs going on everywhere. Everyone's trying to do a lot of things. And we talked about people focusing on their core. So the people who really focus on their core product for the next 5 years, just iterating that single, so for Lightspeed, iterating their pods for the next 5 years, where do we think we'll get to a point where integrations are becoming seamless like our phones?
They should be,
in
my opinion. That's probably the next change. As in, no more physical point of sale. I don't think that happens the next 5 years, but I might get it wrong.
The infrastructure's not there, is it? The industry's so vast in terms of single operator all the way through to
it's also
multi-site.
Rather than the infrastructure, it's also behavior.
Yeah.
We've been designing hospitality teams to serve in a specific way, walk up to a till, or that's all been happening for an age. So that also needs to change.
You do wonder if the regular service table looks enviously at QSR, not in the nature of what they sell or what they do, but more about the slickness of their ops and actually the way they can behave. Now, I don't know why you couldn't implement that type of technology into a normal service restaurant. Behind the scenes, like you said, nice and quiet, but turn it into this seamless operation.
Here's an example. Have you been into an Amazon Fresh?
I have.
Scary the first time.
Well, I'm a scouser, so when I go in there and don't pay, people look at me funny, but apparently it's allowed.
It's nuts. You walk in, they've removed all the barriers, the waiting in queues, the where's my items, etc. They literally point you around, you go out what you want, you walk out. Now, listen, I'm still spending the next 5 minutes looking at my phone waiting for, did this actually work? Or did I just
go shoplifting? Yeah.
But that's the point. That's what it should look like in hospitality over time. So yes, I think they are envious at times, but they've got their own additional pieces. Quick service can't provide the experience.
Yes, I agree. That's what I mean. I don't think they're on the same level, but I do look at them and think, they're really, like McDonald's obviously leading that, and just, what I think McDonald's have done interestingly is almost come back to experience.
100%.
Because they were always about efficiency and product, actually. So they've never really dropped that ball, whether you like the food or not.
Yep.
But where I think they are getting better, or they're trying to improve, because I've got kids, they do go there.
Yeah.
The experiential side of it is actually quite good.
I know you just blame McDonald's on your kids there. I just want to call that.
You mentioned Strava. I just had to put in the fact that it was not me at McDonald's. But no, it's an interesting chat, and you know, it got us round to all-in-one versus best-in-class, which is what we were talking about originally when we sat down this morning. And I was just thinking, that's a conversation I'm having at the tech show next week with some of the big guys as well. It's going to be something that rumbles on, I think, until we get to the integrations being a little more seamless. And then that will provide the best-in-class with a real strong opportunity, I imagine, to take more of the market. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
I mean, it's not a bad shout.
Yeah.
I think that, like, my opinion is, instead of taking my opinion, let's look at customers.
Yeah.
I think that decision's been made. Anyone who's listening to this has got a smartphone in their hand, which means they've already made a decision that matches the one we're currently talking about.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just going to continue to evolve. I think you're going to see a marketplace in every industry, from Amazon, Apple are great examples. All of them have got it. Hospitality will take the same place. Retail have been doing it for ages. You could get WooCommerce.
Yeah.
Even our Lightspeed retail product. And then there's a marketplace.
Yeah.
You go in and connect what you want, because we can't be exceptional at delivering items to the door boxed in a specific way, right? But I can go to the marketplace and find someone who is an expert. And it's normal in retail. And I think retail trends and understanding customers is something hospitality is catching up with now. Because of what happened with the pandemic, I think that now getting close to your customer, finger on the pulse of actually what they want, is now starting to happen, and learning from retail trends is key.
I agree. And interestingly, recently, you guys have brought in payments.
We have.
When I say brought in payments, sounds like you've brought in the police. brought in payments. And you know, you've had interesting feedback, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And I think that you're not the only ones doing this.
No.
So it's not like a light speed thing. I mean, there's obviously your competitors also taking payments and payments people building EPOS, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So everyone's having a go. And the reason is, right, it's good business.
Of course.
But we had a really interesting conversation around why and what you could do with that. So, yeah, please regale us with that.
No, look, we have a unified solution now. And to be clear, I think Lightspeed is often seen as an EPOS company because that was our original wish.
Yes.
The truth is we exist in merchant services, data services, supplier services, consumer services, financial services, right? So we have a broad range of things that we supply. One of the things is obviously this EPOS and payments piece. And for me, it exists for two reasons, or why we ventured into that space, and I'm sure that there's a lot more, but two key ones for me. When is the worst experience for any of these merchants? It's when they stop trade. When whatever their systems are, it's stopping trade.
Yeah.
The number one is taking payment. Even if I don't place the order, I still need to be able to take payment. So that is crucial, and cash is no longer ready.
Gone.
So now I need to take payment. So if that goes down, problem. So we saw a huge amount of support that we needed to provide to our customers. So that was number one. Number two, being open. It's a fantastic business to be in financially, right?
Yes.
It's a good model, financial services. But it's important what you do next. And so if you look at our acquisition strategy, 2019, IPO, go and acquire these businesses. One of them was Upserve, and it had an incredible data analytics piece. So we've now launched Advanced Insights. So payments is not the thing. We have the same as what anybody else has in the industry. Again, my opinion is slightly better, but fully integrated into your back office. So what I mean is you're not logging into two separate portals for payments, et cetera. All of it's in one. But then the game changer is what we do on the other side. Advanced Insights means we anonymize customer data. So every single customer that walks through the door has got Chris walks in, but actually code 1234 comes in.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the information that we can share with merchants. Once we've done that, we can then start feeding back with proactive data to your staff. So I can tell you how many new versus repeating customers you have, right? So that's number one. Most payment companies can do that. But then I imagine you did a product mix back in the day.
Yes, yes, our top 10.
Yeah.
Carluccio's, that was our life, actually. We used to constantly look at sales mix.
So tell me about items 11 to 20. You knew nothing about them, really.
Well, technically, we did. There was one story. I mean, Carluccio's, Antonio had a, I think it was called pasta fagioli, but it wasn't a pasta. It was like a broth, a soup. I'm probably getting this really wrong now, so everyone's swearing at me in Italian. But we took it off the menu because literally that reason, it wasn't in the top 10. We were doing some changes and we thought, you know, we'll take that one out. And we had an absolute car crash because I think about 80% of our sites had complaints around this one dish being removed, because whilst it wasn't in our top 10 at our high volume on a weekend or on a nighttime where people are ordering all the regulars, lasagna, etc., what it was doing was servicing our real loyal raving fans who kind of put us in the position we were in, mm-hmm. that enabled us to open 100 sites because they liked the classic Antonio dishes. And, you know, in hindsight, it's a really stupid thing to do, but you know, you're driven by data. And so we didn't look at that data. We just saw it was an outlier. So I had to go, but you're telling me, and with the conversation we had this morning, that wouldn't have happened.
So I'll tell you by time of day, and I'll give you a magic quadrant. So I'll tell you, top right here, your top performers. These are the ones that sell. And then you can split it by different times a day because you will have seen that was a lunchtime trade in the week, right?
Yeah.
But then I'll start to get super interesting. So I asked you your favorite dish at BrewDog.
Yeah, Korean fries. So embarrassing. You're literally trying to kill me at McDonald's Korean fries. Yeah.
Korean fries, right? But what could happen is everybody walks in here, it looks amazing on the menu. They order it. Then they never order it again. You would never have known that. You will just see it's in my top five. Everyone always orders it. But I can show that nobody comes back and orders it again. So what that does is it tells you maybe something's off in the recipe, or maybe it's just a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, we were saying expectations sometimes aren't met, right?
100%. Now, that's never been able to be caught. You just see it as a top-selling item, so you just keep selling it.
Yeah.
Right? And then on top of that, I've got hidden gems. So hidden gems are items like, not like, they are items that will tell you that a customer came once, they loved it so much, it brought them back. It's a retention item. It might not be in your top 10. It could be your 50th item.
Yeah.
Could be hummus. It could be whatever. I think, what's the name? There is a kebab chain who have hummus. They just now give it out for free because of this information. So you effectively can find out which one of these items are bringing back customers, which one is customer retention. It might not be in my top items, but I can't get rid of it. And actually, maybe I should be giving out for free, or maybe I should be highlighting it, or when someone has a bad experience, this is the item I give because it brings them back. That's what anonymized payment data can start doing for you. And that's where we started this conversation talking about we've now launched payments.
Yeah.
Now, what we've done is given our merchants a tool that's just seamless, but then reinvested and given them a tool that now is going to help them grow, that literally feeds information back to their team, because we know about staff shortages and labor costs, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody, and staff changing T-shirts as well, right? They're all jumping all over the place.
Yeah.
But now imagine you can get a manager who can make data-led decisions. They're young in their career. They're still learning, trying to figure out what they're doing. We're going to give them data-led decisions where the system is feeding back information that allows you to go and iterate on a daily basis. That's how you grow a business.
And is it real time? So I was going to ask you, you know, is it, so absolutely, in terms of visibility, so as you say, if a manager on shift, we don't want them in the office all the time, obviously, but if they've got some downtime between 3 and 5 after lunch, they can go and look at this in real time and see what happened on that shift?
It's on their phone. It's on their computer. It doesn't matter where they are. This is like being born cloud.
Yeah.
This is what it does. That should be the expectation. Why is it that any of the apps that you have on your phone, I can't access in real time all the time? That should be happening. You should have a finger on the pulse of your business instantly all the time. That is proper cloud-born businesses, where we could, in theory, see a pattern happening in the US, here, APAC, anyway, make a change in our product, and overnight, next morning, every single one of our customers have access to it. That's the ability to iterate and change.
It's the speed, isn't it?
100%. So your question around instant access to reporting, in my opinion, is a norm.
Yeah.
Everything else is instant. Why shouldn't this be? But feeding it back proactively to help you make better decisions is the game changer. And our loop in to do that is our payments. And so we've put our money where our mouth is on this. So
and obviously you've had feedback, I'm sure, from present customers or prospective customers saying, look, we don't want to take your payments. We want to do it this way because we're paying 0.8 here, yours is whatever, right?
Yep.
So how do you deal with that? Because it wouldn't be fair not to ask that question.
Of course. No. It's absolutely fair. So firstly, one, we're a financial services business as well now, right? So we can compete with anybody in the market.
Right.
Let's be clear on that. So we can do that just like everybody else does, except we've got more to lose, in my opinion. If we get it wrong, and so when I said we're putting our money where our mouth is, we're going to implement it all for free. We will send people to site, install it, train your team, get it all integrated, make sure it's working. Operationally, you should not have to lift a finger. We'll do all the heavy lifting. We'll compete in terms of the fees, always, right? And then we've now got a bigger ecosystem in there. There's our point of sale. There's likely other pieces that we have involved. We have more to lose. So we're in a position where we want to protect and keep investing in your ecosystem. So right now, they're paying fees to somebody else.
Yeah.
What we're saying is, just shift that to us, and we'll reinvest all of your ecosystem.
I just don't know enough. Just give that to me. But it's true. And I think that's because, you know, we're all, at the end of the day, it's just business, right? And I think it's about, and as long as there's no operational shifting or, you know, anything that becomes a barrier to me. If someone came to me and said, I'm trying to put my operator hat back on here, said, right, we are now doing payments. We are your current POS provider. You're not going to pay any more. You might pay less, potentially,
correct,
depending on what you're paying. And we can do it seamlessly.
100%. And it's fully integrated. So
we'll invest it back into you, into the product.
Here's advanced insights. And then on top of that, it just keeps going. So now we're giving you an unfair advantage to grow your business with proactive data that nobody else on the high street can touch, right? If you're taking Lightspeed, basically, theoretically, we're putting you in a position where if you use Lightspeed, you're better off than the business next to you. And then lastly, we give you access to capital. So what that means is now you're growing, you want to continue to expand. Well, why look elsewhere? We've got capital at your disposal that you could overnight put a slider on and say, yep, I want this, want access to it, without getting into the details of how, what, and why. They could get money the next day to go and start a new brand, start another brand, continue to build their business. Like, we are genuinely reinvesting everything that we're doing back into our ecosystem, back into the industry.
Then I say fair enough. The court is adjourned. Okay, good. No, I just wanted to ask that because I thought it was fair because
it is
fair. We do these audits with operators and it has come up, not just about you, but other POS providers with payments, and everybody's asking the question. But I think being transparent, the fact that you just said it is a good business to be in, then that's normal, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, if I had that chance and I was doing what you do, I would do that too.
100%.
As long as I could justify it by, not justify, actually, that's the wrong word, as long as I could invest that money back into the business and actually support our current clients. Because that's all you want, really, as an operator, that actually your POS works, it stays on all the time, online all the time, and that the customers aren't being affected at any point. And the benefits you give me are a bonus, right?
Hugely. I'm almost to go as far as saying we owe it to them to make sure we make the right business decision so we keep this business going, keep it running forever, so they never have to change this tool again and they just get this competitive advantage.
No one wants to change POS. It's a pain.
And so moving into payments is that thing that we've done that now just allows us to go and continue to reinvest.
It's interesting the way it's so emotive compared to, a POS company who builds workforce management.
100%.
And there's no real furore about that, right? It's kind of like, okay, you're doing that now. But there's 10 other guys who already specialize in that are probably thinking, what about us? I think but it's because it's financial, right? It's because it's...
Correct. It's
that. And they see the benefit for you as well as them. So anyway,
I think the other side of that is there's a lot of, you said it earlier, there's a lot of payments providers who've ventured into our space. And I think that's an interesting key difference here is, if you think about where we started, which was EPOS, we've gotten invested in the tool that you need to really operationalize your business and run. We've gone and acquired all the best in breed across Europe, some in the US, everything, shoved it all into one product. Dev, product, people, knowledge, skills. And then we've put payments on top. Does that make sense? So we're not just a payments company coming to find a new wedge into what you're doing. What we're saying is we know operationally this is the thing that you need, and we have invested in this. We think that we have something that nobody else can touch. We open up a marketplace. We know payments is the piece we need to continue to reinvest in this business, and we know it's the piece that you require to not stop trading. We're doing both. So I think that we have a key difference there in the way that we've gone about it as well.
Yeah, I think you've been really transparent about it, so fair enough. And obviously, Lightspeed's been around for a long time. My old friends at Deliverect were involved in 2005, and you're in over 100 countries. What does the future look like? As in, obviously, payments are now a thing for you guys. You've become a financial services business as well as everything else that you do. But what does the platform look like going forward into the next couple of years?
Look, it's a tough question. I think it's exciting. I think we need to lean into our unfair advantage and stick to our North Star. I come back to this. It sounds like a sales spiel. But the truth is, we exist to provide tools to customers so that they can simplify, scale, and grow their businesses, and provide exceptional customer experiences. That's what our job is, to continue to do that and continue to educate the industry in terms of making the right decision up front. We spoke about you speaking to managers on sites who are fed up, right? Understandably, it's because everyone says they can do everything.
Yeah.
And it's our job to make sure that we get out there and really provide a solution that is stable and changes that narrative.
And that's a real thing, right? We were just chatting off air before about a chap at a pub chain. They've got 9 sites. He's an area manager. He's not an ops director. He's an area manager. He's quite good with the tech. Mm. That's what they told me. So he filled out the audit for us. I rang him back and said, look, I can help you. Here's 3 different pods in 9 sites.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's because he's laid on it. Not him. They've laid on us. They've gone, and this poor chap is now responsible for it. And he just said to me, just help me.
Yeah, help me.
He said, because I've got to do my job. And now my job has been impacted because we're having problems with data flow, integration, complaints, front of house, because things aren't always working. And it kind of comes back to me. And I kind of get it as well. There is no choice. If you don't have a CTO, or if you don't have an IT director, or you don't have that resource, you've got to give it to someone.
Agreed.
And unfortunately for this chap, it's him. I think it's a real problem in the industry that is kind of not spoken about. Well, I'm speaking about it, but it's uncovered, right?
Yeah, and that's what we need to solve.
Yeah.
That exact example is what we are set out to do. Easier said than done.
Yeah.
But I think 2 key things matter. One, that initial decision about having the right infrastructure. And so if I was in his position and I had to rebuild it all, that first decision is key.
Yeah.
And I think infrastructure and access to an ecosystem is already a decision everyone's made, and consumers and Apple and Amazon. I'll keep humming this home. and then lastly, I think this is a key piece. Good technology implemented badly is bad technology.
Yes.
And that's a really, really key piece. Like, you need to invest in making sure it's done right up front. Otherwise, you keep paying for it for years and years and years. You carry this tech debt with you, which is what he's now inherited.
Yeah.
3 different point of sales. Flow of data. I mean, it's an absolute nightmare. And this is what we've got to solve. So what's the future for Lightspeed? Solving that man's problem.
Love that. Might introduce you to after this. But yeah, it's a real thing. And I think for you personally, how does your role evolve? Apart from Ramia doing your role all across Europe, how does it evolve for you? Because you've kind of come out, you're back on track with what you want to do in terms of what inspires you in terms of innovation, people, building a team, fixing hostilities, problems. What is it like for you for the next, I suppose, let's just do a year.
Yeah, that's a great question. Look, I think I love working with people. Fundamentally, that's at my core. It's what gets me up in the morning. It's what I think about when I go back to bed. So in a year from now, I want to build a team that I'm proud of. Guys who wake up every morning caring about how we provide to the industry, support the industry, interact with the industry. That's where I'm at over the next year. I want to build a business where that guy feels like he can reach out to us and get the service he needs, gets the technology he needs, and I want a team who can do that. So in the next year, I'm just going to double down on what I need to do to make sure that happens.
You've got 6 points, haven't you? Didn't you tell me you had 6 things? You'd have to tell me on air, but they're internal, right? You've got 6 key things you've got to achieve.
A strategy this year that fundamentally holds our team in the UK responsible for making sure we deliver to that person.
Love that. And look, Mike, it's been really interesting talking to you. In fact, we had an extended one because we had a chat and a good chat beforehand. But how do people get hold of you?
Look, you can reach out anytime, whether that's LinkedIn, my mobile number, I think it could possibly be on there. I don't know if I want to plug that.
I always warn people about mobile numbers. No.
Look, mike.enslin@lightspeedhq.com. Otherwise, we've got hospitality@lightspeed.com.
Awesome.
Either way, reach out like that. We have a phone number. I know that those still exist. You can call us any time. You can go to our website and reach out.
And most of all, I think reference, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're looking at PARs or you're trying to go and reference some of Lightspeed's customers, right? I think it's fair to say. Go and or reach out to Mike and he'll introduce you to someone, I'm sure. But I was talking to Steve Phillips about this from ex-Marigami now, actually. He's moved on. But we were talking about that and he was saying that referencing part was huge for them when they did their first build of their tech stack. So, yeah, I think reach out to fellow Lightspeed customers or speak to 100%. You guys.
They're all over our website. You'll see videos from the likes of Mildred's Silo. They're a great business. I mean,
Silo, they're the guys down in Brighton.
No, they are in...
Do they recycle everything?
Everything.
Yes. 100%. Yeah, they're very cool.
So a glass bottle comes in, it turns into a glass on your table. They're all of the plastics that have come...
That's like my family with money. The money comes in and they recycle it into stuff that they have instead.
That's McDonald's.
McDonald's, yeah.
No, it's unbelievable. So we've got some incredible customers who are already taking advantage of this, right? Mildred's are now scaling. They're 5-6 sites. They've got another 2 in the pipeline. This is what we're starting to see by using our ecosystem. And it's not just Lightspeed.
Yeah.
Plenty of other products in there that are integrated, working seamlessly, and looking and feeling like one, the opposite of the guy you mentioned. there's plenty of examples, and I think that's key.
Okay.
One, go and look at those videos, go and read what's been said and what they're saying, but two, go and meet them. Go and try the experience.
Yeah.
Go and be the customer and go, geez, this is slick.
Good. Well, we'll do that. We're off to Mildred's. Right. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, my friend, for coming in. You're welcome. Thanks for listening to Second Toast Podcast. We'll be back next week. And that's it. Say bye-bye.
Thanks, Chris. Bye, guys.